Good morning and welcome to Spotlight 92. I'm your host, Malvin Massey. And of course, every Thursday we talk to the movers and shakers of our community and the world, the people that are making things happen for your benefit and mine. And our guest today is a guest who's going here to tell us a fabulous story. And it's about American history and a very strong part of American history. And it's a side that we have not heard before. And if most of us are familiar, although I didn't realize until just a little while ago when I was talking to one of the students that some people don't even know who Al Capone was, but most of us know who Al Capone was and the legacy of the Prohibition back in the 20s and 30s and all that went with it. And we're familiar with the movie The Godfather and The Sopranos. But that's Hollywood's take on what was happening in those days. We don't get too much from the source. And our guest today has written a new book. It's called Uncle Al Capone, The Untold Story from Inside His Family. Uncle Al Capone, it is by Deidre Marie Capone. And she's our guest this morning, Deidre Marie Capone. Thank you so much for being our guest.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Malvin. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too, because the story is so unique. The idea that your name could follow you, your name could cause such grief, I'll put it like that, as you were growing up. It never even occurred to me and to most of us. Like I said, we know of the life of the gangsters from Hollywood. You know of it from inside the family itself. How has that affected you now that you've grown and you look at things in a different way?
Well, now is a different time. You know, when I was younger, I'm 72 right now. So, you know, I saw the heartbreak that having the Capone name had, especially on my grandfather and my father. But my father was the firstborn of the new generation of Capones in America. And he was going to play the role in the Capone family that John Fitzgerald Kennedy played in the Kennedy family. He was going to bring respectability back to the Capone name. Mm-hmm. So that's why his name was not changed. The other people in Al Capone's family, the men in the family, all changed their last name. So none of their children were ever born with the Capone name. I literally am the last person in Al Capone's family that was born with the Capone name.
Wow. And like we were speaking earlier, the idea that of all the things that you went through, when I read, like I said, I've been working at this university for a long time, and when I read that you were very anxious about letting your children know about their ancestry, and I realized that, I thought to myself, they are not going to think about it like you thought about it. They're not gonna have that. They're gonna be thrilled to know that they're part of
their
religion.
Name is not Capone though. So
yeah.
Remember, you know, when I married, of course, my name did legally change. But all the while growing up, I mean, I was using my father's middle name as my last name. So people didn't know me as Deirdre Capone. They knew me as Deirdre Gabriel. But when Al died, my family needed something joyous to look forward to. And, of course, I was a Catholic, and Catholic children, when they're 7 or 8 years old and in second grade, they make their first communion. And back then, you always made it on Mother's Day. And so my family needed something joyous, and they outfitted me, and they bought my shoes and my dress and everything that I needed. And they all came to watch me, you know, get my first communion. And then we all went back to the Capone house for a great big picnic outside. It was a beautiful spring day in Chicago, and it was very, very nice. But back then, this is 1947, and back then they always had local editions of the big papers. So on Monday, the local edition of the Chicago Tribune and the local edition of the Herald American both ran the story that the children at St. Philip Neri made their first communion, and Deirdre Capone, with the entire Capone family in attendance, made hers. Well, I was using Gabriel as my last name, but how many Deirdres do you think were in the city of Chicago in 1947, let alone how many Deirdres were at St. Philip Neri School? There was one. So, you know, everybody then knew who I was, and 2 weeks later, every boy and every girl in my second grade class was invited to this girl's birthday party, but not me. And that's when it started. None of those children ever had anything to do with me. I never was invited to a birthday party, at nothing.
It was just that sudden. I mean, they had been, everything was cool before that.
Well, yeah, but see, you know, when Al Capone died, of course, all of the press all over the world told the same stories again, you know, accusing him of just about everything. And, of course, my classmates' parents were being educated for the first time in their lives as to this person called Al Capone. And then when they found out that I am indeed a core member of that family, they would not have anything to do with me.
Wow. That had to be very, very hurtful when you were that small.
It's very hurtful. It was very, very hurtful. I went to the same school with those children all the way up through eighth grade, and I stayed on the same campus for my high school days. So the girls that went on to high school with me from the elementary school still wouldn't have anything to do with me. There were other girls that came from other elementary school schools that went to high school with me, and some of those people didn't know who I was, and we did become friends at that time. So, but they didn't know who I was.
Was it a thing of them being afraid of your family itself, or was it a thing of them just ostracizing you because of the family?
It was a little bit of both. And I can understand it. I'm a parent. I have four children. I have 14 grandchildren. You know, if you found out that, you know, a neighbor, you know, was some kind of a lecher or who knows what, you know, you'd be a little wary and kind of warn your children, you know, against them. Well, this is back in the 40s when it was even more so. I mean, you know, mothers stayed home in those days. They didn't work. So there was always somebody around, you know, to watch the children. And so it was just a different time. But, you know, it was very hard on me. And then my mom left my dad when he didn't get to be a lawyer. The Chicago Bar Association would not allow him to practice. Mm-hmm. So she divorced him, and then she went off. She was, you know, just imagine the kind of woman that would marry into the mob, and you pretty well have nailed my mother. And so then all of a sudden, you know, I didn't have any friends. I didn't have a mom. I didn't have a dad. You know, it was just like, okay, what happens to me now? And that's when I turned to the Capones, especially my Aunt Mafalda. She was really like the second mother to me and really, you know, looked out for me. She was born Mafalda Capone, and I was the next girl that came along that was born Deirdre Capone. So we had a lot in common, the two of us.
Yeah, and wow, that's did you have a lot of brothers and sisters, or just
No, I had one brother who turns out he wasn't even a Capone. He was my half brother, but I didn't find that out until after he had died. But you know, he was not born with the Capone name. So, you know, I'm literally the last person in the core Capone family that was born with the Capone name.
Wow. And in all of the, by the way, if you just tuned in, this is Spotlight 92. We are talking to Deirdre Marie Capone, who is has just written a new book. It's called The Untold Story from Inside His Family, Uncle Al Capone, by Deirdre Marie Capone. And it's available right now, as a matter of fact. It's on the bestseller list.
Correct.
And it's available at all the outlets right now. And
every bookstore, and they can get a signed copy from my website, UncleAlCapone.com.
Okay. And looking at the situation at the time in Chicago, you were pretty small. You didn't know anything about what they were doing, what was going on in the world.
As a little girl, when you would go over to the Capone household, especially the one on Prairie Avenue in Chicago on the south side, if Al was in attendance, there would always be armed guards at the front and the back door. Yeah. Also, all the drapes on the first floor windows would always be closed shut. This was a typical Chicago two-flat, and so the upper floor, the drapes were always open, and it was always bright and sunny. But the lower level was always darkened because they just wouldn't trust anybody, be looking in from outside and, taking a shot at, Al if he was in there. So I knew that there was something different. Also, my mother had some relatives that lived directly across the street from the Capone house, and they always had terrible things to say about my family. And even as a little girl, I would hear them say those kinds of things, and here I am. I am a Capone. And if they're saying those terrible things about my grandfather, my father, my aunts, my uncles, what does that say about me?
Wow. That's hard, too. That's hard. A child will take things in like that. A child will have things going on in their head that an adult doesn't even notice or recognize that's going on in there.
Correct.
And you told a lot of great stories in the book about these things. When did it become necessary for you to, when did you feel like you had to escape from your name?
Well, my children urged me to write the book. My two youngest boys returned back to Chicago as young adults. They went to Northwestern University, on the north side of Chicago, and then they got their MBAs at the University of Chicago. So for those 6 years of education, they returned back to the city that they were born in, and they would see derogatory billboards and hear statements on the radio and, just derogatory things about Al Capone and Ralph Capone and the Capone boys and, the outfit and all that stuff. And they said, Mom, you've got to tell your side of the story. Because, see, the Capone DNA is surging in their bodies. And, I've got four children. I've got 14 grandchildren. There's never been anything more than a speeding ticket that any of my descendants have ever gotten. So I'm trying to say, was Al Capone a mobster? Yes, he was a mobster. Was Al Capone a monster? No, he was not a monster. Was he a villain? No, he was a victim. And so I'm not going to whitewash anything. I'm not going to make things out to be different than they were. Was he a bootlegger? Yes, he was.
Was grandfather, Jack Kennedy's dad, too.
Well, this was 1920s. America passed a very unpopular law. It was called Prohibition. And they needed to change the Constitution, to do this. And they worked very hard. And most people don't know the real reason why Prohibition was started. It was a very political move. After the end of World War I, Germans were immigrating to America, and they were bringing with them their ability to make beer, wine, and spirits. And there was a certain faction of people that were very bigoted against the Germans. They hated the Germans, and so they wanted to try to stop their businesses. And for a while, they were very successful. And you would see, newsreels of them going into warehouses and using the pickaxe to break the barrels open and see the beer all going down into the sewer. Well, this is at the turn of the century, and at that point in time, the Italians were the low people on the totem pole. They were the last to be hired and the first to be fired. So when Prohibition started, it gave these people who really didn't have much education, there was no chance for them to be lawyers or doctors or teachers, it gave them an opportunity to earn money to take care of their families. That's why there's so many Italians that are associated with that point in our history. You see The Sopranos, you see, you know, The Godfather, you see all these movies, and of course it is the Italians that are being depicted. What I want people to know is the decade before that, the Irish were the low people on the totem pole. They were the last to be hired and the first to be fired. But at that time, our nation was going through a phase of becoming more urban. And so cities were being started. And when they were being started, now the children needed to be educated. So schools were opened up. And also we needed a police force, somebody to set the rules. Well, look at what the Irish did. The Irish are synonymous with teaching and law enforcement because that whole industry opened up for them when they were the low people on the totem pole. And it's the same thing with the banning of alcohol. It gave the Italians a chance to get into things. But it didn't last long. Prohibition ended in 1931. Again, they had to, you know, open up the Constitution and you know, make an amendment against Prohibition. So it took a lot of political force and political strength to even set Prohibition. Now, during Prohibition, the people in rural areas, you know, could make their own alcohol. People were doing, you know, beer in their basement. Some people would open up little stills and distill spirits. But the people in the cities needed somebody to provide it for them. And so there was an industry that started in every single city. Al Capone only had part of city of Chicago. There was many other people that bootlegged, you know, liquor just, you know, as much as he did. Why is he synonymous with it? Because he was Italian. Joe Kennedy was not. Joe Kennedy was Irish. And so the businessmen in the city of Chicago were very, very much against the Capone boys. In reality, they were the first Italian millionaires in the United States of America. And it was not right for an Italian in those days to be that rich and powerful. So they brought him down.
But the excitement of what was going on and everything in the media was what brought them to such a celebrity.
Correct.
Yeah. But what I would like to ask you is, when, like, obviously you love your family, everybody does. And at the time you're a little girl. And so, you know, this is Uncle Al, you know, and he, like you said, he taught you how to play the
mandolin,
yeah, and taught you how to swim and all those things.
Yep.
And you were going, but after his death, of course, you started going through these changes. When did it become necessary for you? When did you think in your own mind to say, okay, I've got to stop being a Capone for a while? I mean, I doubt that you felt like you would come back to being a Capone after you, when you decided to get away from it.
Well, after I married my husband, he had an opportunity to move out of Chicago and move up to Minnesota. And that was my chance to escape my Capone roots and see what I could do. And I grew wings. I have done amazing things, especially for a woman of my age. You know, when I was growing up, there weren't that many choices, you know, for women in the career, you know, environment.
Yeah.
So there was just a few things that women were, you know, likely to get into. But I have done amazing, amazing things. And so that's the Capone genes in me. They were great businessmen. My grandfather really ran the operation, and I had him till I was 34 years old. And so he would, you know, just teach me things, but he made me promise that I would not write my book until all the original family members had passed. So, you know, I kept my promise to him. But he told me at one point he was running over 300 different establishments. And just think, he didn't have a computer, a cell phone, or a fax machine. And it worked. Yeah. 300 different businesses that he was running and hiring and paying the bills.
Wow. And a big, big payroll, too, no doubt.
Oh, I'm sure, sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you just tuned in, by the way, this is Spotlight 92. We are talking with Deirdre Marie Capone, who is the niece of the legendary Al Capone. And she's written a book. It's called The Untold Story from Inside His Family, Uncle Al Capone, by Deirdre Marie. And it's on sale now everywhere.
It's Uncle Al Capone, The Untold Story from Inside His Family. The correct title is Uncle Al Capone.
Yeah, Uncle Al Capone. And yep. Deirdre has had one story that was really interesting. I wish you'd tell us about. Is you said that when you lost a job because of your name.
Correct. My first real job after I got out of high school is I went to work for an insurance company downtown Chicago. And after you were at the job for 6 months, they would get you and pay for a life insurance policy. So they, you know, gave me the paperwork that I had to fill out to get this life insurance policy, and of course I needed to fill it out in my legal name. Mm-hmm. They hired me, you know, as Deirdre Gabriel, but I had to get this in my legal name, so I had to put down Deirdre Marie Capone. And about 3 weeks later, my boss called me into his office, and he was kind of training me to be his secretary and a stenographer. So I took my shorthand booklet in there with me. I thought he was going to give me some dictation. And he said, "Deirdre, sit down." And so I sat down, opened up my tablet, and he said, "Tell me your name." And I knew something was not going to end.
The alarm started going off in your
head. Yeah, the alarm started going off in my head. And I said, "Deirdre Gabriel." And he says, "No, tell me your real name." And I went, "Deirdre Capone." And he said, "Are you any relation to Al Capone?" I said, "Yes. He was my uncle, and his brother Ralph is my grandfather." And he says, "I'm sorry, you can't work here. You're fired." Well, if this was 1958, and it was about this time that all of these organizations, such as the one that my grandfather was running, was starting to launder their money. And, of course, they would go into car dealerships, restaurants, and insurance companies.
Yeah.
And so this insurance company didn't want their investors to think that it, you know, any money was being laundered through there. So they couldn't have me working there. I don't think they could do something like that today, you know, with the right to work laws that we have in place and stuff, but they sure did it back then, and it really hurt.
I can't believe that they did that. I mean, how would anyone know? You know, how would anybody know that?
Well, you know, I don't know. Once they knew my legal name, you know, then, you know, I would have to change it on everything. And so they fired me. And
wow.
So, you know, it hurt. And I, you know, thought maybe I should change my name legally. But, you know, once you got married, your name changed anyway. So, you know, I just stayed with it and continued to use Gabriel. And I wouldn't work for another insurance company, that's for sure.
I guess not. Did you, now that you've written the book and, you know, you have gotten past the times, because times are different now. I mean, everything is so different now. But do you find yourself defending your uncle more or just telling the history of the story?
Well, All I'm trying to say is the only thing that Al Capone or Ralph Capone was ever convicted of was income tax evasion. My grandfather was convicted for the same years, the same amount of money as Al. My grandfather was given a 3-year sentence. Al Capone was sentenced to 11 years. Mm-hmm. That alone is totally, you know, biased and unequal. Then my uncle was found evidence that the federal government had tortured a witness at Al's trial to lie. And he wanted to present this evidence, and there is a law, and it's called the writ of habeas corpus. If a prisoner thinks that he has been wrongfully incarcerated and has evidence of it, then he can go back to the judge and jury that sentenced him with this new evidence. Al Capone was one day away from being taken out of Atlanta Federal Penitentiary and being taken back to Chicago, Illinois, to give this new evidence when the first warden of Alcatraz was contacted by J. Edgar Hoover, and J. Edgar Hoover said, "You want to let the world know that Alcatraz is one place that once you get there, you never get off, then transfer Al Capone out there." And that's exactly what they did the day before he was to go back to Chicago. They transferred Al Capone out to Alcatraz. Al Capone should have never been on Alcatraz. The only thing he was ever convicted of, again, was income tax evasion. And he didn't even owe that much money. He owed the government less than $10,000. There's a lot of people who are representing us in Congress right now that owe a heck of a lot more than that. And they have never seen a jail cell. So, but they transferred him out there just for the publicity. And there is no writ of habeas corpus out on at Alcatraz. Lincoln, President Lincoln, removed that during the Civil War. And so what they replaced it with is time off for good behavior. Al Capone got released in less than 7 years of serving an 11-year sentence. He became a model prisoner. That is not a monster. Somebody that can do that is not a monster.
Well, and he did his charitable thing. He did it, made charitable contributions all along, all the time he was making all that money.
Since now people know how to get in touch with me, there was a woman that got in touch with me on Facebook and said her grandfather owned the shoe store in Cicero, Illinois. And she said, "Your grandfather or your uncle would come in there twice a year and buy shoes for all the children in the neighborhood whose parents could not afford to buy them shoes. Twice a year. After the 29 stock market crash, my grandfather opened up the first soup kitchens in the nation. And they also gave $10,000 a week to the Chicago City Council to buy food for the needy people."
Yeah. That was all part of the mystique of
correct
of the whole thing. If we're running out of time, as always, I hate that because we could talk for a lot longer. I want to ask you about Al launching the careers of Louis Armstrong and Nat Cole, and trying to integrate baseball in the '30s and trying to bring Babe Ruth to Chicago. There's so many things, but all of these things are in the book. And again, how can people get a hold of it?
They can go to my website, UncleAlCapone.com, purchase one there, and I will autograph it and send it out to them. They can go to Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, go into any bookstore in their neighborhood. And if they don't have it on the shelf, they could get it for you the next day.
Great. Well, Deidre Marie Capone, thank you so much for being our guest on Spotlight 92. And
I enjoyed being with you.
And again, thanks for writing the book. Because
you're
myself,
welcome.
I'm a history buff, and there's so much of our history of this country that should be fixed, as it were.
Correct.
And so many stories that need to be told, and you've told one now that this is very good stuff. Thank
you. I even have more, but I'll save that until later.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Well,
thank you
thank
so
you
much.
Thank you for having me.
Once
sure,
again, bye-bye. Deidre Marie Capone. And the book is Uncle Al. My Uncle Al Capone. And this has been Spotlight 92. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, you're back for more of the best in jazz. This is U92 FM.